Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 37 in Training the Pointing Labrador. This is Julie Knutson. For people who are new to this, you know, or somebody said, hey, you got to listen to this. I heard a couple things that I liked. This is, even though it's called Training the Pointing Labrador, because I've written two books on that subject, that's the title, this has everything to do with certainly retrievers doing, you know, working retriever things. And also dogs in general. The purpose of this thing, just to acquaint people that are new to this, is to help people out who have a variety of goals, different things that they want to do with dogs. And they maybe some people aren't sure. You know, I don't even know what I can do. I don't even know what's out there. Or some people are very determined. They know exactly what they want. And they're looking for, you know, some ideas and some different ways of looking at things. So this is to kind of help people. I'm not one of those professionals who says, listen, I know how to do this, and this is what you need to do. That never would have worked for me all the years that I've gone through learning, and I continue to go through and learn more things. It's just good to have your thinking stimulated and maybe sometimes have your eyes open to a little wider way of looking at things, because there's a lot of, amazingly to me, a lot of ego in dog training. No, I know how to do it. You know, do what I say or do what this video says or you know, whatever this YouTube thing. And it can be very difficult to know, you know, who's right and who's more right than someone else. So I'm trying to help people get on their own feet about making their own dog decisions and their own training decisions and some ways to think about this. And frankly, some ways to be successful on their own without having to always go to outside sources to try and, you know, figure this stuff out. Because in the end, everything I've ever learned, ultimately the good stuff, was when I just kind of sweated out on my own and you know, just worked hard to figure things out. So with this podcast on a variety of topics, I try to at least let people know what my experience has, you know, shown me and how to approach this to go do what it is you really want to do. And maybe above all, folks, remember that this is supposed to be fun. And I say that, and I know some of my clients that are listening to this are going, really? You're pretty hard on us. You know, you're always after me about everything, and I don't know how fun that is. My husband said that to me this morning. He goes, people just love having their blank chewed when they're out doing the thing that they like to have fun doing. But it is supposed to be fun, and you have to remember that. If you make mistakes and you're not perfect, and then you're human and you're like all the rest of us, and you want to keep that kind of in mind as you pursue all this stuff. This is most people's hobby, most people's way to vent from the rest of the kind of stressful world they're in. So remember that this is not, we aren't doing, you know, life-saving surgery here. We are training dogs and doing the things that we enjoy doing, a lot of us very passionately. And you want to make sure that you do find the enjoyment and the pleasure in this. And if you're around somebody who makes it really hard for you, other than my clients, when I make it tough on you, I want you to take that anyway, because I want you to be really good. But remember that this should not be, this is not a measure of your value as a human being. It's not a measure of your intelligence or how good of a person you are. It's something that you want to get better and better at doing, and that you want to enjoy and make kind of life more enjoyable because of this hobby, or if you're doing it professionally, when you go out every day and do this, where it's a little more fun than, oh golly, here I go, I hope I can do this right, or hope I don't make mistakes. So I just want people to remember that as we go into this, because I talk very seriously about the details of this, and because I take the details, that's where all the answers are. You know, the devil's in the details or God's in the details, whatever saying you have, it really is. And so kind of pay attention to the small things that you do and what your role is and then how that affects your dog. And if you proceed from that point, it makes everything you do a whole lot easier. I guarantee that. So what I'm going to do with this episode today is answer some questions. I've had some, I love the feedback from everybody. Thank you so much for that. I appreciate it. And people have some, you know, everybody, well, can you tell us about such and such? And so I'm going to try with some frequency in this podcast to address those questions so everybody gets, you know, what it is they're trying to get out of this. So this is sort of a listener question answer podcast. And I'm going to start with a real simple one. I got one from somebody. It's a great question, actually, for those of you that don't live in the city or live, you know, for people that live out in the country like we do. Somebody said, what do you do when you have, you know, your upland dogs and you also have, you know, family birds? You know, you have chickens or you have ducks or geese or whatever you have. When you have birds that exist with you that are not to be, you know, pointed or hunted or retrieved or any of that, how do you manage that? And it's actually pretty simple. And I just say this from experience because up until recently, we've always had chickens. And the way we did our chickens, we had them in a yard and they had their own house and yard. And then during the day, you know, we'd let them out so they could free range and eat bugs and stuff. So it was a commonality to have birds that were not training birds wandering around the place. And we'd have hundreds and hundreds of dogs through here, you know, getting upland trained. And it wasn't a very difficult thing. But so it was kind of a two-part deal. For very young dogs, dogs that you really don't have a lot of control over, which is from 8 weeks to what, somewhere 7, 8, 9, 10 months, somewhere in there, when you can actually call them and they come and they understand that they need to do what you say over their own desires. Then whenever we were anywhere, one, we probably wouldn't let the chickens out if we knew that these dogs were going to be around. But if I was going to go by where they might encounter a bird out loose, I would just have them on a leash. So they never, ever got to learn to go chase those things. Now, that doesn't mean that worked 100% of the time. But it was just if I fell asleep at the wheel, they might chase a chicken or something. But our chickens basically were never afraid of dogs because if they saw a dog, it wasn't going to come after them. So the little dogs, the young dogs over which I did not have the control, we would go by the birds on a leash. This does not teach them not to be bird hunters. It just taught them not to go get the chickens that are over here. Those aren't yours. And when the dogs got older and began to really understand the game, I didn't have to have a leash, and if they showed a lot of interest in the chickens, I just called them to me, and we did not engage in that. It did not detract in any way from their hunting. They really can differentiate between the family birds and the birds out in the field. You know, you don't go walking by your chickens or your ducks or whatever you have with your orange vest and your gun on, so that means we're not hunting these birds. Very easy to just, all you have to do is be consistent, show them this is off limits at whatever level of showing them you need to do. You know, some dogs you might have to be kind of severe on, and some dogs all it takes is a few words. But just, they can learn. These are family birds, they're not yours, and these are, when we got the regalia on and we're out in the field, then it's your birds. So you just don't want your chickens out in your upland field, I suppose. But it is that simple, and it's it does not detract in any way. I have never had it do it. I've had four-time Grandmaster, like, and just walk right by the chickens, and they just look at them and keep right on going. It doesn't even cross their mind to engage on them. They may kind of get pointy a little bit, but we're not hunting those. And so that's an easy one to deal with. Now, another one that I've had is... And this was a real good question, and I want to go into depth a little bit on this. This is important for anyone that is doing retriever training, and particularly if you're going to compete, but also if you're not. Because when we're talking about retriever training, now I'm going to talk about doing the retrieving part, which is called running marks, because a mark means the dog marks where the bird goes down, sees it, watches it, focuses on that area. So we are training the skill of marking. And there is a lot to this. And what I've seen happen a lot is if you train with field trial people, and that's AKC field trials, that's different from a hunt test, and it's different from a run and gun. Right? This is the the most outrageous, the longest in 400 or 500 yard marks, 400 or 500, even over 500 now, I hear, yard long blind retrieves. So it's the extreme. It's kind of like NASCAR in the world of driving. The people out in the field wear white coats so that the dog has a chance of seeing where the gunning station is. So people who run field trials always want to have white coats on. And then the people who don't run field trials and run some of the other hunt test venues where you cannot, you're not allowed to have white, and sometimes you're required to have camo or whatever, then a white, oh my God, they're very worried, I can't have white out there. And then the field trial people sometimes can get very worried because there isn't white out there and you're wearing a blue shirt. Whenever I throw for my husband and his people, I don't put white on very often, and they just get kind of riled up. But so people get these real strong ideas about how the gunners are supposed to be, and some of the HRC people and AKC people are like, oh, we have to have a duck calls out there. We have to have it. And the pointing lamp people, they have to have duck calls. I think it's required in the tests in certain areas. Have to have this, and we have to have holding blinds, or we don't have holding blinds, or it has to be. And they get real tied up in the details of the gunning stations. Now, not that that's not important, but there's some things that are more important than that, that it would be very good in approaching your dog training. Now, for people who just want to train their dog to hunt, you know, and they kind of just laugh at the whole gunning station thing, but that's important for the hunting guys too. Some of the dogs I train are just hunting dogs. They're just going to, you know, they're going to hunt pheasant and quail maybe, and then they're going to duck hunt and do some goose hunting. And I approach their training exactly the same way as I do the dogs that are looking for all the titles, because I still need the basic skill set of good marking and understanding the whole activity of retrieving. So let me just take you on a little mental trip on this thing. Again, I don't care what it is you want to use your dog for. The basic skill for a retriever who is going to do retriever things, first, of course, is basic obedience. So they're next to you and they sit still. And so that's, again, basic obedience, very important. I don't know if you're hunting and you're in a duck blind or a goose blind, or if you're jump shooting or whatever you're doing, when the action starts, you need that dog to watch the action. You know, a good experienced dog knows when the birds are coming in before you do. They know whether they see them or sense them or whatever it is they do. They know to look. Now, they can't be doing that if they're jumping up and down and making noise and running around and jumping on you and knocking the guns over. They need to be still and focused. A good hunting dog needs to be still and focused. And even in upland hunting, you need a strong level of focus. You're just not sitting still until the bird's found. So sitting still and focusing outward, that's very important. So when you are going to train your dog to these fundamental skills, you need a dog that will sit beside you, sit still, and is being taught to look out, because all of the action, whether you're hunting or competing, is out generally in front of you, which is one of the reasons it would be highly advisable for you to have someone throwing things for you. If you use those little hand launcher deals, you know, which sometimes when you train by yourself, that's all people have, then the all the action is right beside you and emanates from you, which is not very realistic in the real world. So you may have to do that. If you do that, put your dog on a sit, move away with your launcher, you know, so that the dog is looking out and not straight up over top of his head to see where all the action's coming from. So you need a dog that sits, focuses, and looks out. And this kind of requires, for the most part, that you have somebody, particularly when you're starting this, somebody that's going to go out there and produce the bird that's going to go down. And I use the bird. It could be a bumper or a bird, depending on your level of training. I'm just going to call it bird here. So somebody needs to be out there producing the bird and giving the dog the opportunity to develop the skill of focusing, marking, and making its best effort to get directly at what went down and then to bring it back to you. So there's a lot to this. And this is where you have to be careful with all the advice. You have to have somebody that looks this way or does this or has the duck call. Let's simplify this a lot more. Let's get down to the dog level instead of the more complicated busyness of the human level. So if you're just starting this, if you're just starting to throw marks because you have a little 12, 14-week-old puppy, or whether, you know, you have a dog that you just want to train and get better for this stuff, when you're just starting this, you first have to teach your dog the game here. All right, dog, you're sitting next to me. I am not doing any of the throwing and shooting. And this person who's out there, plainly visible. Let's just say we're at the soccer field right now. We're at the neighborhood soccer field. And so they walk out there, you know, 20 yards out or whatever would be appropriate. And they stand there. And your dog, this little puppy or whatever, they may not, 20 yards might be a long way for a little puppy, but whatever distance where they can see them. And then the person gets the little dog's attention. And now you can do it any way you want. If it duck call is makes you happy, get a duck call. I don't even start with any of that stuff. I just do a little hup, hup. I get the dog to look at me because I am the best thrower I know. I want to throw for everybody's dogs because it's so important, in my opinion, to have somebody out there throwing for you who can make what needs to happen happen. So you've come with your dog, young dog, and they've never done this before, so I'm wearing whatever I have on. I don't care what it is. I'm not going to dress into any particular thing. I'm going to walk out in this soccer field. Hopefully you've got your dog where it sits. If it doesn't, hold it in a seated position. I'm going to get the dog to look at me, and then I am going to throw the bumper, and I am going to be watching the dog the whole time. If the dog looks away at something else, something happened, okay, I'm going to get another bumper out or bird or whatever, get the dog's attention, and I'm going to throw it again. So it's my responsibility as this gunner out there at this stage to make sure your dog is looking. You can't steer them. That's not what the hand is for. You don't put the hand down and try and like a rudder and try to get them to look out. Just like the action that occurs, the duck or the bird making noise is going to draw their attention in the real world. I'm going to get their attention out there and then I'm going to throw it. And if they're new to this, I might, you know, then you should send the dog early so that it understands, go get it. You don't start by teaching them to mark and be steady and do all of this at the same time. So I'm going to get their attention, hup, hup. I'm going to throw it. I stare at your dog the whole time so that the dog, this needs to be easy enough, big white bumper, say, on the soccer field, so that dog can go out there and pick that up and come back to you. Now, heavily common sense, and I can't go into all the detail here, heavily common sense. So what happens when you first start doing this? I throw the bumper, your dog goes out, picks it up, brings it back to me because I threw it. Because all the earlier times you threw everything, you threw it, it came back to you. You threw it, it came back to you. So many times dogs think, oh, I got to bring it back over there. They're confused. And so they don't automatically know I have to come straight back to you. So if that happens, couple things, I might step out, I might be close to you, throw the bumper, and then when the dog's on the way out, go back behind you. So the only place to come is back to you. That's one thing I might do. I might locate myself in a way out there that I'm behind a big shrub, or I'm behind a fence, or I'm behind something. So coming to me is not as easy as it seems. When I throw these things, I throw them a long way from me so that I am not right there by it and it just seems logical to come over and give it to me. So you have a lot of common sense here, but my job is to make sure the dog is looking out, sees this thing go down, goes and gets it, and then comes back to you. So we may do that by where the gunner is placed. We may do that, you got a real long cord and you just reel the dog back in. Bring them back to you. So through repetition and consistency, they learn, oh, I go back to you. I can't sit here. I don't have enough time to tell you the 10 zillion things that could happen and what you might do. But the dog needs to go out and get what was dropped and bring it back to you. So use gunner placement, use a cord. In the beginning, you can have little puppies. I like to have the thrower come back behind the handler until that habit is established. And then a lot of times you can stay out there and they'll come back. But going out, locating the thing and coming back is the first thing you need your gunner to be able to do, your thrower for you. You do that before the gun, before any trick stuff. You get that simple mechanism going. Now, once you get that, now your gunner begins to take on additional roles. So let me remind everybody of this. The person handling the dog cannot make the dog look somewhere. You cannot make them look somewhere. That is one of the roles of the gunner. So if you're going to go out and practice what's called walking singles, right, which is what you should do in the beginning and maybe a lot of times, and you don't want to go the same distance all the time, right, but we're going to do walking singles. So in other words, I'm your thrower, and we're going to go out and do some walking singles for your dog. So, and we're going to use bumpers, right? And again, this is a little guy. I haven't even brought the gun in yet. So I'm going to walk out. I got my bumpers up off the ground. I'm not swinging them around. I'm not making them be the object of anybody's attention. So I've got my handful of bumpers. I keep right next to me. And I'm going to walk out at some distance that the dog can see things clearly. And I'm going to start on the soccer field where there's a white bumper laying there so the dog can go to begin to learn this is what you do. You go out, you look for it, you come back. So now we've got a dog that's doing that. So now I'm going to go out and into a field. And there's some grass and you can't, it's not just laying out that they can see from the beginning. They have to kind of get out to the area. So I'm going to go out and I'm going to throw one. One of the things that must be taken into account when you're doing this is the wind. So if the wind is blowing, if I throw the bumper in to the wind, right? Just picture, I'm the thrower now, and the wind's coming in my face, and I throw it directly into the wind. If that little dog runs over to me, he will then smell the bumper and go out and get it. So he was rewarded by finding the bumper easily by just running over to me. So if when... And there may be times where I need that particular thing, but generally I don't want to teach that. You don't run at the thrower and then that helps you figure it out. So instead of throwing into the wind when we go do these, I'm going to throw them the opposite way. I'm going to throw them with the wind. One, that lets me throw them nice and far. And if for any reason that little dog runs over to me, it will not, that does not help it find the bumper. So you've got to be aware of the effect of wind. Now, if you're having a dog that's having great difficulty doing this and having the wind help, then use the wind so that the dog can, you know, you could throw it so the dog's running right into the wind and can smell it long before it gets there. If you need to build some confidence or help teach the dog, then use the wind. But don't let the wind become a crutch. And so you've got to be very aware, either as a handler or the thrower, whoever is running the situation, that the wind is helping you in whatever you're doing. So I'm going to throw this with the wind long ways away. You need to release the dog soon if it's just learning this. So it's a dynamic, not a static retrieve, but a dynamic. So the dog runs out, you know, as it's going down, so it's a lot easier to find. Once they're pretty good at that, then we have to make this a static retrieve. They need to sit there, watch it go down, wait for you to send them. You may have to physically restrain them. Just kill the wiggling right now. Kill the noise. Don't let any of that happen. If you start early, then you'll never have that. And they run out and pick it up and come back. Now, generally, is after you do this, you know, for a few days or a week or two, then they, whenever you're going out to work, they're just looking out. Where's the thrower? This is going to be awesome. So now you don't really have too much of getting them to look out problem. So now I'm going to introduce the gun. Okay. This is a first timer. I'm going to introduce the gun. So I have my little blank pistol that I'm not going to use a big gun, a big noise. I'm going to use a blank pistol, a cap pistol, starter pistol, something that is gun-like sounding. And so the gunner, this, the dog has not heard a gun before. People are scared to death of gun shy, creating gun shy. And it doesn't have to happen. So you got this little dog that now knows, oh man, this person is out there and they're going to throw stuff. And so, this is so great. And they're looking out and they're wiggly and you're having to hold them down. All right. So this is what I'm going to do as your thrower. Dog hasn't had a gun before. So I'm going to get not real close. I'm going to get out at some distance where they can still, I know they're going to do it, but I'm not right close to them. And I'm going to get them looking at me if I have to. If they're not looking at me, I'll do a little hup. And then I'm going to shoot the cap pistol. Now, when I do this, I'm going to shoot your cap pistol and I'm going to be looking at your dog. If there's a ricochet, if I shoot that pistol and then the sound waves bounce off the building behind you and so the dog turns around and looks back, I'm not going to throw anything because the dog isn't going to see it. So if that happens and there's a ricochet and the dog looks back, I'm going to hup another time, not shoot again, but hup another time to get the dog looking at me, and then I'm going to throw. So it only takes a few times of this, and I'm going to move to a different location, completely different, so the dog can't run to the area it hunted, found the other one. I'm going to separate myself, move away so the wind has not become rewarding it for anything, and I'm going to shoot, watch your dog. Again, if I have to get their attention back because of ricochet, I will throw it again and have them until pretty soon the dog figures out. When you hear that gun, you keep looking that direction because something's going to go down. So they have to learn about things like ricochets and stuff and just gun and what does that mean. So the first step on this teaching the gunner thing and teaching the gun is after they understand the mechanics of this retrieving, and they don't bring it back to me, the thrower. They take it right back to you. Right? And then I move every time. So each location is unique and not related to the other. And they can't smell the other one. I move in the wind so that they don't smell where it landed before and go look over there. We got that part. So now I'm going to introduce the gun. Right? So I shoot. Then I wait and make sure the dog's looking at me. And then I throw until the dog looks out at me. You know, you guys, I'm going to do maybe 3 retrieves and then stop. I'm not going to, let's get this gun thing taught today. I'm going to do 3 retrieves. I'm going to take what I get. It's going to tell me what my next session is. If the gun just made them get up and get all squirrely and scary and whatever, then I'm going to maybe do the next throw without the gun to kind of get them relaxed again. Just common sense stuff. Hey, we're not in a race to anything here. So again, if the gun got them kind of wobbly, I'm going to do one without it. And then I'll come back, depending on how wobbly they got, and I might shoot again and then go hup, 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 and then throw it. So it's like, oh yeah, this is good. Basically, I need that little dog not to follow some routine, but to be excited about what's happening. And so that's how we approach this. So after maybe 2 days, 3 days of 3 retrieves apiece with the gun, now we walk out, not the same place all the time, you guys, right? Not the same place. Go somewhere different so that they're not learning something through location, but they're learning something through carrying out the activity. So it's a 3rd, 4th day that we've done this, and I go out and your little dog comes out and just sits down and is just staring right at me. So now, and you signal me when you're ready. And I'm looking the whole time. I'm the gunner now. I want to make sure, even if you're signaling me, that that dog is looking at me. And let's say it's not. It looked over at something else. You signaled me. So I'm going to say, hup, real quick, get the dog to look at me. Then I'm going to shoot. When I shoot, I'm going to still look at that dog and make sure that it's looking at me. Then I'm going to throw. A long ways from me. And I'm not going to do anything after that. Now, here's the part I haven't talked about yet, but as a gunner, once I throw that thing, I am no longer in the picture. Whether I am hunting, whether we are running AKC Master Hunter, the gunners should not be a big deal to the dog. They should not. And even if you run field trials, in my opinion, and a lot of these guys don't totally buy this, I don't think that the gunners should be a big deal. Because it's real easy to trick a dog by having the gunners throw somewhere and then just relocate slightly. So if they're going off the gunners, then they aren't going to be hunting where that bird went down. So you can trick these fancy field trial dogs sometimes just by moving the white coats away from where they were. So at least I think everyone, including those guys, should train the dog to go where the bird went and not pay all that much attention to the gunners. Now, sometimes on the fourth bird on a quad, you know, and there's a white coat out there 500 yards and your dog runs at the white coat, you're probably going to get that bird. So there is a part in that field trial world where they do need the gunners to be a big deal. But when you're teaching these guys and when you run hunt tests, the gunners should basically not be a major factor. So as me helping you get started in here, I am a major factor. But once your dog is en route to the bumper that I threw, right? I have the bumpers up close to my body. I'm not waving them around. I'm not answering my phone. I'm not making noise. I'm not shouting instructions to you. I basically just cease to exist and I sit there. If the dog suddenly comes running over to me, you know, because they're just having a blast, I do not interact. I do nothing. I don't tell them to get away from me. I don't speak. I don't do things that are going to engage with the dog. I will just stand there and you need to get your dog back. And if we have a problem, then we need to go back on the return work. But I don't factor in. Now, the only place as a gunner that I do factor in is if the thing that what we're trying to achieve, if there's a problem coming up. Now, let's say we've got the gun thing now. So I'm throwing for you every day. We go to a new place. I don't do the same distance, right? I don't do, let's throw, these are all 50 yards. Depending on your dog and the age, I might throw one 50 yards, one 150 yards, and the other one 125 yards. Then another day, I might do 20 yards, 80 yards, and then 150 yards. It's always going to be go where the bird is, not out this magic distance and then drop your nose and hunt. So this is another place where we teach them, you go where the bird is. Marking is so important. You don't run out a certain distance. Don't practice the distance of whatever events you're planning on using. If you're in running events where they're never to roughly exceed 100 yards and everything you do is 70 to 100 yards, then that's all your dog will ever do. And I come and throw marks, judge your test, and I run one at 140 and your dog can't get out there and you think I'm a terrible, terrible test setter upper. No, you have a dog that doesn't mark the birds because you've taught him only to go a certain distance. So as your thrower, depending on your dog's age and skill level, the distances will be different so that they learn to go where the bird is, not 47 steps out and stop. So that's something as a thrower you need to be aware of. A lot of stuff here. So let's say I'm throwing for you and I throw, and I don't always throw exactly the same way. Sometimes I'll do a flat throw. That's one that's basically 90 degrees. As your dog runs toward me, it's straight out 90 degrees. That's a flat throw. And then there's angle back throws. So instead of 90 degrees, it's an angle back 45 to the back. You want to vary that somewhat. Generally, in a lot of competitions, they generally throw an angle back. I know HRC does a lot of throw inwards. So when you run events where they might throw a bird in the direction of you from the gunning station, you need to make sure as you progress over the weeks and months that you do angle backs, that you do flat throws, and if you're exposed to these, which most of us are, some inverted throws. In other words, it's more toward you, not directly, but more toward you. Because believe it or not, dogs will habitually, if you only throw angle backs, then they will always look in an angle back area from wherever they think the thrower is. So even though the thrower doesn't factor in a lot, dogs are very smart. So if you always throw the same kind of thing, then they'll always hunt in the same kind of area. So your thrower needs to be careful about that. But let's say I'm throwing for you, and I throw a flat throw, and it's 75 yards. It's in light cover. You got to go through some stuff, and then it's in the light cover. And your dog comes out, and for some reason, he's having one of those days. And he starts hunting deep and deep, and then now he's just kind of heading towards the next county hunting. Here, assuming you're not at the level where you handle, if you're at a place where your dog handles well and understands it, then you don't want the gunner intervening at all. You want to go ahead and handle only if you need to. Only if you need to. Don't handle if he just runs past, like, oh, look, I'm going to handle, bring him right back to it. Then you teach a lot of dependency on you. Don't do that stuff. That's another topic. This is a young dog, can't handle. It's running deep, and it's just hunting deep and just having one of those days. So what I'm going to do, it's my job, not yours, my job to try and get your dog back to the area of the fall, because he can't handle, and we've got to do something. So what I will do is I'm not going to move around and teach him to tune into my body if I don't have to. I am going to do that very familiar thing and say, hup, and get the dog, try to stop the momentum and the inertia of the dog away and see if they don't kind of stop that and begin to work back toward me. And if they don't, I might do a little bit more. Hup, hup, hup. Do something kind of crisp. And I'm not going to call them. I'm not going to interact with the dog. I'm not going to go, hey, Fang, get over here. Come on, you're way too far. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just try and kill their thinking about going too far and bring them back. And I'm going to let them work it out in their head. And if they clearly aren't going to do that, I have a couple options, right? I could hop up and move a little bit and see if that brings them back. I don't like the moving thing because, again, that teaches them to begin to focus on throwers. So what I can do, let's say I don't want to do that because your dog wants to be very dependent on me. So I'm going to do a hop, and as soon as they glance over to me, I'm going to throw another bumper to that same location. So now they're going to see that, pick it up and come back. Now, we may repeat that. I don't like repeating stuff because the dog showed it didn't mark well. And just repeating, a lot of times teach him, I don't work too hard because I'll give you another shot at it anyway. But if we're teaching a young dog how to get through some cover and do something, I may repeat that. But I'll throw that so that they get over there. Now, this is a dog that doesn't handle. So that's my role. But once I throw that, right, I now cease to exist again and I don't interact with the dog. When you move as a thrower, when you move around, then the dog will often pay attention to that. Generally, the rules are for throwers, right, is you face the bird that you dropped. You face the bird. So all of your energy is going directly at that bird. A lot of times if you turn away, you know, thinking I'm not going to interact and you turn away, then the dog might start searching out in front of you. They have that tendency. You know, you hunt always in front of somebody. So it's advisable, not mandatory, but advisable to face the bird. Don't move. Don't talk. Don't be on your phone. Don't be fidgeting and stuff. Don't do anything really that draws the dog's attention. If the dog runs over you, does a flyby by you, just do nothing. Do not have any of your bumpers or birds on the ground so the dog can come over and pick those up. That's kind of a new guy thing. You walk out there, let's say you're throwing frozen birds, and you walk out there and you set your bag down and you get the bird out and you shoot and throw and the dog runs over and grabs one out of the bag. Oh, you'll have a mad handler. So whatever you've got, if you're doing walking singles or moving, make sure that you're not putting a lot of scent on the ground and make sure that nothing is available if the dog does come over by you. And if the dog does come by you, do not interact. If the dog just comes over to you and sits down, then you guys need to work a little bit more on getting the dog just to go out and get the mark and come back. But if that happens, you're going to have to just throw a bumper out there and see if you can get this, you know, get the dog kicked back into doing what it's supposed to do. All of that stuff is normal. Dog's coming over and sitting next to the gunner. Dog's grabbing something out of the bucket or the bag. So just as a gunner, try and set yourself up so you prevent all that. Now, this is going on, and I don't want to just make everybody be asleep, but one more, if you're going to compete now, if you're going to compete at wherever, there will be holding blinds and buckets of birds and people and noise and some things like that. That's just the way it is. Particularly for people that train by themselves or just in a small group, you don't have a crate of flyers out there, live birds that somebody's shooting flyers for. Nobody has that. You don't have a bucket that has 20 birds in it. You don't have three people out there and some of them making noise and wrangling around and chairs and wingers making noise and all that. So once you've gone through this process I've been talking about where your dog understands there's a gunner out in the field and I'm not going to watch. I watch because that's the source of the thing I want most. This bird or bumper's coming out. I go get it and I bring it back to my handler. When you have that, you know, pretty solid, and you want to go, now we're going to compete. The hunters don't need to worry too much about this, but if you're going to compete, then when you compete, whatever venue you run, there's a bunch of scent and energy and sometimes noise you don't really like out there. There are holding blinds up. There are chairs. There is stuff. So what you want to do is familiarize your dog with that in training so that when they go to the hunt test, and I've seen this a zillion times in entry-level stakes, where there's like a whole crate of ducks, right? And the dog has never seen, maybe never had a flyer. That's a live bird that you shoot, because they do that in AKC. So they've never seen that before. So they run out, they shoot a duck, you know, and it goes down and your dog runs out there and then looks over and goes, holy cow, I found the mother load. Look at there's, and they're just obsessed now with this crate of live ducks behind the holding blind and you're out. So the best thing to do for those of you who want to compete is to the best of your ability, you need to set up, even if you train by yourself, you can still do this. Let's say you have wingers. You're a winger guy. You train all by yourself, and you're trying to get your dog ready for the first hunt test you're going to do. So you can buy or make little cheapy holding blinds. You know, they don't have to be, it's just a camo-y looking thing, or, you know, I don't care, a green blanket strung up on something. So you can have a holding blind, and behind it, if you're using wingers, have your winger, have a chair. We have these fake people. These plastic things with hats and jackets and stuff. So it looks like somebody there. And they put sunglasses on them. It's crazy. I'm like, I walk out sometimes and go, who's here? And it's the man, the fake guy. But you can, you know, put chairs out there and stuff. And you can have, if you're training for competition, you need to have birds. So you can have a bucket of birds up on the chair, not down where the dog can reach in there and get it. Have a bucket of birds. So that when your dog runs by that, they get used to stuff and bird scent and chairs and things that are out there. That's real important. So even if you train by yourself, you can put, you know, again, put your kids' dolls or something out there. You can have stuff that looks like people out there. And you want to teach your dog that you go get the bird. Never mind the other stuff. Never mind if you smell a whole bucket of birds. That's not what you're out there for. You're out there to get the one you saw dropped. So you can get real creative in thinking about ways to do that. But your gunner basically shouldn't exist other than to produce the bird. But your gunner also needs to be ready to help you. You cannot, to help you if you need it. You do not want, we've had some of the best teenage kids in the world work for us. And we've had a few that when you put them out on a long gunning station and it's a warm day, they just fall asleep. That's the last thing you want, particularly when you're, you know, on the building process. Some of those real experienced dogs, you know, you just got to have the people throw a bird and that's all they have to do. But when you're teaching stuff, you need to have a gunner who's out there and ready to help if necessary. And they would help if your dog doesn't handle and they're just completely leaving the area and show no sign of making a good big hunt and coming back. Okay, you need to get that dog back as clearly and easily and without engaging with the dog as possible. So you have to know whether a hup is going to work, whether you have to shoot to get them back, whether you have to throw something to get them back to hunting their bird, and then step out. In other words, you're done. Don't have any of your stuff down. Don't make a bunch of noise so the dog is busy looking at you. Because all you want in this whole thing is the dog to walk up, sit down, look out, know something's going to happen, remain focused. Wherever the bird goes, then they go to that area to the best of their ability, hunt it up, and bring it straight back to you. That's what we want. And it has to be regardless of the distance. It might be short. It might be long. It might be close to where another one was. It might not be. There's a whole much to that training, running over one fall to another like you do at the more advanced levels. There's a lot of stuff. Sometimes, let me give another example of the gunner. The gunner's there to help. Let's say we have a little dog that's unsure, just kind of unsure about this. And sometimes they're real good and other times they're not. So I'm throwing for you, right? And your dog's having some confidence problems or you know, you're having a hard time stretching them out. So I'm out there, I'm at 120 yards. I'm out there, you signal to me, right? I shoot and throw because this dog isn't real experienced and I don't pretend I'm hunting. Shoot and throw, and your dog's coming out and it's starting to slow down. Guess I'm going to throw another bird right then to the exact same spot. So your dog's on the way out and it's starting to falter. Boom, there goes another bird. And so the dog is going to continue the rest of the way out there. Now, you can't do that all the time, but that's called double birding. So sometimes when you need a dog to learn to go a little farther or to have a little more confidence, then the gunner has to see that and immediately respond. So you and your gunners need to work this kind of thing out. So, all right, if the dog does this, this is what I want you to do. If the dog, you know, doesn't do anything, just don't do anything at all. And so there's a big science to this, but you need to keep in mind, okay, I don't care what kind of shirt you have on. I really don't. You can do a duck call. It's good to do duck calls somewhat so that the dog understands, boy, when I hear a duck call, there's going to be a gun and a bird. But it isn't. Don't train so that every single time you do marks, you have a duck call. Because then if you ever do marks and they don't have a duck call there or somebody's duck call broke or something, that the dog still is completely capable of carrying out the mark retrieve. Don't make anything that you do other than good obedience be exactly the same every time. Because then you're teaching them by pattern, by habit, not by skill. And we want these dogs to watch where a bird goes down, regardless of how far or, you know, what's between you and it and all that. Go to where the bird is, pick up the bird, and bring it back. And the gunner's purpose, one, is to produce that bird, and two, to help the dog if nothing else is going to work. And in helping them, helping as little as possible, but just getting them to that bird. So gunners are super important. If you have a good gunner, they create no problems and they prevent a lot of problems from happening. But when you have somebody working for you, we have a rule in our world, no gunners can quit or be fired. We never yell at them. We never, you know, the gunners are super important. So when you have somebody throwing for you, or if you throw for somebody, agree on what you're going to do. In the beginning, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is what, if this happens, I want you to do that. And make sure it's fully understood so that you don't have to be talking and otherwise interfering with a dog that's learning about the marking and the retrieving skills. Don't obsess over what they're wearing and what you have out there and what order everything happens and what the sound is. Don't obsess over that. You want that to be as little a factor as possible. We want a dog with a good marking skill who's very clear and confident in what they're doing. So that's the thing on throwers, and that's kind of very long-winded. But that goes for an 8-week-old puppy. If they can see a gunner or whenever you introduce a gunner, make sure the gunner is helping you and not hurting you. The gunner is not important. Only what the gunner produces is, and you need to get that in the mind of your dog. And you don't talk, you don't move, don't make your body be a big deal. Be as little of a factor as possible. When you need to help, help, get the job done, and then be right out of the picture again. And when you go out to throw, don't ask how many more dogs. Don't ask how many more birds. If you need water, take some water with you, a bottle in your pocket. Keep the scent off the ground for now, for beginning guys. Later on, I don't care where scent is. They need to go where the bird is dropped. So this is another thing of real clarity. And again, if you're going to go run field trials and stuff, then make sure your dog understands the role of white coats. And that is probably something to pay attention to. But again, that can be used against them. Don't always have holding blinds. Sometimes have somebody out there in a blue shirt sitting in a chair, right? In other words, don't teach them that this is how the picture always looks like. Teach them to be good markers, and your gunner is one of the biggest helps you can have on that. And that goes forever. And so I see a lot of people when they come train with me get real upset about, oh, aren't you going to have this, or we don't have that, or, oh, and I always have one station without a gun. Because sometimes when you run events and the gun doesn't go off and the bird still goes, I need to have a dog that looks out all the time. And there's a lot more to, you know, have your dog pointed not at the gunner, but where the bird's going to go down. There's a lot to all that stuff. But I hope this helps on the gunner thing. And I hope this helps on the chicken thing. And because this has kind of gone long, I think I'll draw it on a close on this one. There's a lot more questions that I need to get to. And we will have, I'll do another puppy podcast. We're getting into the beginning of the teenage stuff with Naked. And so I've had some issues. And I'm happy to talk about all that soon here on the next podcast. But I hope this helps. And we're getting to crunch time. Now, the season is, you know, the last couple months of hunt tests and all that is going on. I think I'll have if you guys are interested, a kind of a refresher on preparing for the pointing lab tests, because there's some weird ideas about all that stuff, and just kind of help people ease into that a little bit comfortably. And let me know if there's more stuff that you guys need. I'm very interested in hearing your feedback, and I hope everybody is having a safe and decent summer. I will talk to you here very shortly.